I will be talking today about some technical aspects of open type fonts. It's not, it won't be a presentation, it will be more like a show and tell with a few slides and some showings of what features look like inside of fonts and why it is the way it is that there are different implementations. Of course, this is like the ideal picture of, you know, we have some fonts, we have some applications, and ideally in the, basically this multitude of different font formats, as Tan said, those things are sort of slowing, going away, and basically OpenType is these two flavors. There are two OpenType flavors, the PostScript or CFF flavored OpenType with typically, or with the file extension OTF, that always gets a green icon in Windows, this one, which has the glyphs drawn using Bezier curves, and then there is TrueType flavored OpenType, which is a bit more complicated because in that sense, OpenType is an extension or continuation of the TrueType format. So, very generally speaking, every TrueType font is an OpenType font because it's just like a replacement of the format. And TTF, TrueType flavored OpenType fonts, or TrueType fonts, just in the old language, they can just be very simple fonts with a bunch of characters in them. They can have open type layout features, which I will be talking about today. They don't have to. It's the same is true for OTF. Open type layout features are not like a mandatory component of an open type font. You can have perfectly good open type fonts without any features at all. For example, some dinkbat or symbol fonts are just a collection of glyphs, and there aren't any open type features, or maybe sometimes the only open type feature in the font is kern, which stands for kerning. So it's open type layout is the process of transforming the characters string into a set of glyphs composed on a screen or on paper. Oops. Unicode is the basic encoding for OpenType, and pretty much you can have, in theory, other encodings, and there are in fact some situations where there are other encodings than Unicode used, especially for simple fonts. Simple fonts are a very, very specific and messy aspect of OpenType. Mm-hmm. And I will not talk about simple fonts here. If somebody wants a private lecture on simple and dinkbat fonts in OpenType, I could do it, but it's really outside of the scope. For text fonts, let's call them text fonts, Unicode is the basic. And the other basic is the principle that one font can include several glyphs for each character. So, of course, a character is like a semantic information, a certain piece of encoded text, a string, one element in a text string. And a glyph is a visual implementation, visual representation of a character. We can have different characters that traditionally, in the old font formats, it was usually so that, apart from ligatures maybe, that one glyph for a particular character was in one font, and then another glyph was in another font. So basically, these would be all separate fonts. In OpenType, you can have a lowercase a and a small cap a in one font, and they all actually represent a lowercase a character. Or you can have three different glyphs for a lowercase a that are just stylistic variants, some random or swashy characters. In a very simplified view, which is, it's not really very accurate, but it's conceptually sort of good for understanding it, is this sort of explains how the relationship between Unicode and the OpenType features works. Basically, Unicode encodes characters, and in a font that supports a certain number of characters, there's always one glyph that is like a default representation of a character. So this glyph here would be the default representation of the character A, and it would have a glyph name and a Unicode that sort of points to or represent or map to that character. So so this glyph would have an entry in the CMAP table, in the table in a font that maps glyphs to Unicode character code 0061, the Unicode for lowercase a, and it would also have the appropriate glyph names. I will talk about the glyph names in a moment in more detail. And basically, this series of glyphs here is what you would have in a font in the encoding vector, or in the encoding table, or in OpenType speak, in a CMAP table, the character mapping table. So all those glyphs would be encoded, and they would all be sort of the default representations. And then in addition to that, there can be a number of glyphs that are accessible not through directly entering a Unicode character code, but through entering a Unicode character code and applying a particular OpenType layout feature. And there are different classes of OpenType layout features. There are some classes of OpenType layout features that the user is supposed to apply by himself, by sort of making a decision, I want to use this particular feature in a sort of discretionary manner. There are some features that are applied automatically by the layout, by the typesetting engine, especially for non-European writing systems. There are a lot of such features where basically the user doesn't have any interaction with those features at all. The typesetting engine sort of knows where to apply them, and these features are usually very specifically applied depending on the writing system. So for example, for Arabic, there are different features and they're applied differently. For Devanagari, there are different features that are applied differently. For Tamil or Tibetan, there are different features that are applied differently. For those, as I said, I'm not going to talk about them. I don't know much about complex script OpenType development myself anyway, because I've never worked on such fonts. The general rule is that it's pretty much only Microsoft Vault that you can use to add such features. And it's pretty much Uniscribe, Microsoft Uniscribe, that is the reference implementation and sometimes the only documentation that there is. ICU layout or Pando, when implementing open type behaviors for complex scripts, as they're called, they basically emulate what Uniscribe does or copy what Uniscribe does. And Microsoft, with every version of Windows, adds support for new scripts, writing systems, or improves the support for existing ones. So for example, if you look at Windows 2000, Windows XP, Windows XP Service Pack 2, Windows Vista, in each of those versions, Uniscribe got better in terms of some problems were fixed, some writing systems were expanded. For example, for Arabic, in Windows 2000, it was only handling Arabic and Persian, Farsi, and then in newer versions of Windows XP, they got added Urdu and some other languages that use the Arabic script but are not Arabic language, and use some different characters. And that's been going on for a while, and this is sort of an element of the OpenType specification that is not part of the ISO standard, and that is only documented at the Microsoft website, and it's very poorly and documented, and the documentation that there is right now is also partly out of date. So that is one of the biggest problems. But as I said, that's sort of complex scripts. I will be talking about European scripts in general, meaning Latin, Cyrillic, Greek. And for those, there isn't practically any of those special automatically applied features or linguistic features that are necessary to typeset a proper, orthographically proper text. Most of the features that you will see are discretionary, are used by users selectively, either on a whole block of text or maybe just only on a single a word or a set of glyphs. A very simple example of such features are substitutions, simple substitutions. So a simple substitution from lowercase a to a small cap a glyph would be happening under the OpenType layout features that is called small caps, and it has the OpenType layout tag SMCP. These four-letter tags are abbreviations that are used in the font to describe these features. There is about 125 registered OpenType features in the spec, and I will show you very briefly the most important ones. So of course, this would be sort of an example of how such features are applied, are selected by the user. So in Adobe InDesign, you would have a menu or also a palette where you would have a checkmark ligatures, and in InDesign an additional OpenType submenu with additional entries, and this is basically like a pre-selected number of features that are being supported. This is CS, in CS2 and CS3 some others were added, and essentially you are able through the user interface to access a limited number of features that Adobe decided to expose. In addition to that, I think starting from Adobe InDesign CS2, it's also possible to apply arbitrary features through JavaScript, so you're able to have your own little user interface or use JavaScript scripting to say, okay, I want, you know, let's say the feature unique, which is unicase, which is a quite specific feature that sort of is supposed to give you letters mixed uppercase and unicase letters, letters without the sort of uppercase and lowercase letters without any extenders. And that's a feature that is hardly present in any fonts. Maybe there are 10 fonts on the market or 5 fonts on the market that have it. It's registered, and of course, Adobe didn't expose it in the UI, but you can access it through JavaScript.
But this feature only uses the simple replacement.
Yes.
So
yes.
It could be very easily.
Yes. Yes. There are. I will get to the different lookup types, which is another aspect of OpenType. This is just another user interface. That's macOS 10. The system support in macOS 10 for OpenType layout is actually quite good, because most of the it's basically on the system level applications that use the system font selector can have access to this little submenu, to a typography palette, and there users can choose various OpenType features. So Apple applications like Pages and Keynote and Numbers or Text Edit and other applications that use the system font selector can use that. On Windows, just a very small remark: if you in the regional language options, if you install a support for complex script and right-to-left languages, then applications like Notepad and some other applications that use the system font engine will start supporting a small subset of OpenType features, even for Latin fonts. So things like ligatures or contextual alternates will start working, because what it basically does is, very simply speaking, it activates Uniscribe on the system level. Okay, so yeah, before I get to the problems, I will sort of talk a little bit about the different kinds of OpenType features that are there, and sort of their classification. This is sort of like an ad hoc classification that I've made. I've grouped the features into sort of functional classes, and this is an overview of the different applications and sort of environments and that support OpenType. So we have macOS 10.4 and 10.5, and 10.5 a number of new features have been added. We have WPF, which is Windows Presentation Foundation. It's a sort of new graphic subsystem for Microsoft Windows that ships with Vista and is also able to, you know, so install it on Windows XP. A sort of a light version of WPF is called Silverlight. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's kind of like a graphic XML-driven graphic environment. It has a very complete, a very good support for OpenType. Then there's Notepad, which actually this stands for Notepad and other applications
this
that use.
Is for XP or Vista?
This is pre-installed on Vista and available as a download for XP. And this is for XP, starting with XP Service Pack 2. Then there is Word, 2003 and 2007. Then there are a number of versions of Adobe InDesign. Adobe InDesign comes currently in two sort of different versions. One is the regular US international version, the other is the Middle East version, the ME version. And then there's Illustrator, Photoshop, Quark Express 7, which was the first version of Quark Express to support open type layout features. And then LL is a sort of a small text editor for Mac OS 10, which actually has quite good open type support. And I will just sort of down there I have. This is actually not really very accurate. It's there, but you can see that, for example, there is a number of open type layout features that are outside of the scope, but just to show you what kind of stuff is there, that are specifically dedicated for Asian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean scripts. And we have things like full widths, half widths for the Latin characters that are used within Japanese or Chinese. Abilities to switch between simplified and traditional Chinese using OpenType. Different Japanese sort of national standard forms from 1978, 83, 90, and 2004, where they have kind of standardized the appearance of certain characters, and many others. There's also, for example, an italics feature which where it's a good case for showing that OpenType is, or even those features, are not sort of very rigidly defined. The specification says that it's recommended to be used in Asian or Chinese, Japanese, Korean fonts only, meaning that for Latin fonts you would usually have the italic glyphs in a separate font and the Roman upright glyphs in a separate font, while for Japanese fonts you would typically have one Japanese font that would have all the kanji, and then you would have just the Latin characters that would be both Roman and italic in one font, just for space, you know, for space reasons. It would be reasonable to duplicate the whole kanji font and only have the italic Roman letters in the second font, while all the other characters would be identical. So for that reason, they've added this feature. This feature is not exposed anywhere in the UI, but I imagine that people could, you know, I know that some people have used it in Roman fonts as well, if they specifically wanted italicized variants of single letters.
If we had a single font with italic and Roman, we could have an italic correction like in text, which for the moment is impossible in OpenType.
That is true. That is true. That is a very good point. Basically something like essentially, roughly speaking, kerning between italic glyphs and Roman glyphs. Also called the italic correction. That would be possible. That's sort of traditionally, or it's the problem with that is that it essentially very much limits the usefulness of the fonts in different contexts. Although I could imagine people designing a Roman font with the italic glyphs, and then having also a separate italic font for old applications, or you know, applications that just don't support OpenType layout. So I don't know of any companies that have actually done it in a complete set. But I imagine it would be possible, and if somebody wanted a proper, you know, well-defined italic correction in sort of a font that works very well when switching between Roman and italic very often, this could be a feature, you know, to look at. There is a number of features in OpenType that that are sort of that deal with mostly with the linguistic part of the typesetting process. So localized forms is a feature which allows sort of specific variants. This is actually the one slide that popped here into this is like a standard Russian Cyrillic bet in an italic font, and this would be a form that is preferred by the Serbian, by the Serbians, and this is something that you could put in, that is typically put into the localized forms feature, which is applied automatically if the layout system supports it, if the application supports it. I actually have forgotten this because it's supported in InDesign CS3. If the user chooses, say, Bulgarian or Polish in the character menu and assigns it to the to a paragraph, then automatically the localized forms feature for the particular language is executed. Or Turkish, for example, a good example is Turkish, where you don't want the FI ligatures to be forming in Turkish because the I with a dot and the I without the dot are two different letters, and many ligatures remove that distinction visually. So then in most fonts, there is a mechanism that prevents the
F-I-J.
For example, yes.
Isn't that in the ligature part? I think that Turkey has invented
in the... yeah, it used to be done in... Well, some people put it in the ligature feature. Some people do it a little bit differently by using Adobe, for example, these days. They put it, let me show it, yeah, let me just show some examples before I sort of continue talking in theory. This is a font that I've been recently working on for Nick Shin. It's a very nice Scotch modern that has a, you know, large character set, which has a Latin with many different diacritic characters. It has Greek, Cyrillic, very nicely drawn Cyrillic with polytonic Greek, Bulgarian Cyrillic, several different variants of digits, small caps for Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic. And even things like a small cup, SZ for, because it was recently added to Unicode, or display titling umlauts for people who prefer them or like them in display context. And well, my job was to open Typeify this font. So let's take a look at what this looks like. Okay, one more remark before I go here is that also glyph names in fonts are pretty important. This is an example showing that glyph names are important for two reasons. One is that unfortunately, macOS 10 up to version 10.5, so including version 10.4, was not looking at the Unicode characters at the Unicode mapping in a font for OTF fonts, for Postscript Flavored Open-Net fonts. Instead, it was looking at the glyph names and was making up the Unicode on the fly using an internal table that was in the system. So for TTFs, it was taking the Unicodes and mapping the glyphs straight ahead. For TTFs, it was ignoring the Unicode search in the font. It was looking at the glyph names and mapping them to glyphs using an internal table stored in macOS 10, and that internal table had a certain number of glyph names that it recognized. And for example, in case of the Baltic characters, you know, G and K and L with under comma, it did recognize the names G Sadia, K Sadia, L Sadia, which were actually names that were dropped and not recommended by Adobe. Adobe recommended the names G comma accent, K comma accent, L comma accent, which macOS 10 didn't recognize. And the only names that worked in sort of both according to Adobe recommendations and that also worked in macOS 10 were the uni names. The uni followed by four hexadecimal digits.
Or duplicated glyphs.
Or duplicated glyphs, yes. There were some people who were duplicating the glyphs, calling them K Sedia and K Comac accent. And then some people later found out that using the uni naming convention also works. So this is one of the examples why, that's basically one of the problems that Hans was talking about, so I'm very glad he did the talk. Because it really shows that, you know, some of the practices are not really part of the specification. They're really more like dealing with imperfect implementations of the format in different environments. And indeed, it is so. It's my, you know, daily bread is basically making the fonts so that they're as robust as possible, and sometimes actually contradicting the official spec, but sort of knowing that this is better. Yes.
With the baseline, you know, right window.
Here,
yeah.
It's coming from a different font, so so macOS 10 sort of, because Adobe Garamond, because Adobe, these are two fonts, Adobe Garamond and Accolade. Accolade has the glyph names named uni something, and Adobe Garamond has the glyph names named according to the Adobe specification, G comma accent, K comma accent, L comma accent. In InDesign, it works for both, okay. And then in text edit and in Microsoft Word 2004 for Mac, in Adobe Garamond, the system is substituting glyphs from a different font. So in text edit, it's substituting from Lucida Grande, and in Word, it's substituting from Times. Yeah, it's some sort of
way.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, the character, the glyph substitution. If a font doesn't have a certain glyph, what happens then very much differs, like in every single application. So maybe it's to indicate that there's a problem. I'm not sure. Okay, so let's take a look. Functions, features that will be performed. And this is like the top tree. The top tree is the script tree. And properly implemented OpenType layout features engine should, for all the Latin characters in a font, it should apply OpenType layout features from this part of the tree. For Cyrillic characters, it should apply features from this part of the tree. And for Greek, this one. However, since well, this was done especially for like the complex script. So, for example, for Arabic, you would have the Arab script, and then you would have certain behaviors for Arabic. And for Devanagari, you would have the Devanagari script and certain behaviors for Devanagari. However, Adobe up to InDesign CS3. All the previous versions of Adobe applications, they only applied features from the Latin script, even to Cyrillic, Greek, etc., etc. So essentially what one needs to do is make sure that, let's say, Latin small cap substitutions are mapped here, and Cyrillic small cap substitutions are mapped both here and here. And also, ideally, also here. So it's kind of like you basically map everything everywhere, except the features that are really very specifically intended for certain scripts. So if you're really sure that a particular behavior should only happen for Cyrillic, or for Greek, or for Latin only, then you only do it here. It's very simple in the FTK syntax, fortunately, so it's not so much of a work. The next level is...
Are these scriptings predefined?
Yes.
And there's a bidirectional relation between Latin and the Glyphlink inputs, so that one bit is exactly one script name and one script.
Well, no.
But who decides that this script is Latin and Greek? Or
this is based on the Unicode information, and Unicode has all characters have either a specific script or they're in a common script. So common characters like digits and parentheses, etc. All those behaviors should basically be mapped to all the three trees. And for the Unicode characters that Unicode assigns to a specific script, for example, Unistrive will then look at the appropriate part of the tree. The second level of the tree is actually languages. While there is a default language behavior, and this always has to be, if you specify like a script, then there's always got to be a default language behavior. In addition, optionally, there can be additional languages if you want sort of like exceptions. So for example, if you want to have special treatments for ligatures for Turkish, you would also have a Turkish element in the tree here. And if you want special treatment for, say, the cursive B and Cyrillic for Serbian, you would have Serbian here. Or, that's for let's say, for Arabic. In Farsi, certain letters are different, or in Urdu, certain letters are different. And then you would have the Arabic script, and then Urdu as the language. And then only here comes the features. So the features are actually registered. You know, I could have my small caps and my liga and my old style numerals here and here and here and here and also here. But here, for example, the liga definition could be different, or I could have an additional local feature.
This is up to the layout engine. This is up to the layout engine.
The second.
This is up to the layout engine, where we have to put the features into which language and
construct, I mean, basically the layout engine looks at the Unicode string, and then it splits the Unicode string into text runs, and then it goes to a particular a branch of the tree.
Yeah, but wait a minute, this is an application issue, yeah? Because you just said previous version of Ilya didn't do it that way.
Well, yeah, essentially the layout engine in InDesign. So the layout engine in InDesign was a subset, was only implementing a subset of OpenType.
What does the specification say? The specification says you should look at the Unicode and what fits
it. Yes, it does. It was Adobe was ignoring that part of the specification. They didn't have time to implement. So now this is basically in at the beginning of the what you see here in FontLab Studio is the so-called Adobe SDK for OpenType syntax, which FontLab Studio uses, and also the free closed source Adobe feature font development kit for OpenType, which I think you're using. So this is basically the same syntax. This is at the beginning, which is here in the right lower part, but in the feature field that you would write in Adobe FDK, that would be at the beginning. It's like a kind of like a table of contents or a definition of all those branches of that tree that will go into the font. So we will have a default language system, which I will actually skip right now because that's something
it's kind of new. The whole day.
Yeah. But we will, if we have, we sort of see that, okay, this font is basically having three scripts, support for three writing systems, Latin, Cyrillic, and Greek. And for those, we have the default language in them. And then we have a number of special treatments somewhere in the feature code for Latin-based languages, Moldavian, Romanian, Turkish, Azeri, and Crimean Tatar, for Greek language, and for Cyrillic, Bulgarian, and Serbian. This is basically this list makes sure that if you don't specify inside of the feature definition that you're doing something script or language specific, then that feature will be registered to all of those. So let's say I have my feature definition for old style numerals. Substitute regular figures by old style figures. Then this substitution will be registered in all those branches of the tree, which is what it should be. Because if I forget to kind of enumerate those here, and then I do something like I want special treatment for Turkish in my ligature feature, then all the others feature will not go into Turkish, and then my application will only see the ligature feature in the Turkish context. So this is to make sure that within each of those language contexts, all of the features are being seen, and maybe some of them have some special code inside of it. So you know, some features are quite obvious, like let's say the old style, the old style numerals is just substituting regular features by old style features. Figures. The code for that was actually what it's doing. It's also substituting, because these are these here are, if you can see the pretty small, but you can see the string of glyphemes here. So this is basically the character string, and then without any processing, this is the output glyphemes string separated by slashes. So this is like the A glyph, the B glyph, the C glyph, and then here this is 1, 2, and 3. By default, this designer, and that's most the case, decided that tabular lining or monospaced lining figures are the default. So if I substitute, if I activate the old style figures feature, it substitutes the monospaced tabular lining figures by monospaced old style figures. So these are the tabular.
The name is not correct, is it? It should be called Odin.
Yeah, that was the decision of the designer. Because, yes, basically these are, yeah, so the tenum is basically the tabular, sorry, this is basically the tenum suffix. In this case, I would call them onum tenum, but he just wanted to shorten the suffixes. This is actually old style tabular. Then there's another feature that substitutes tabular figures by proportional figures. So in here, when I activate this one, I get proportional lining. And if I activate both, I get proportional old style.
That's only.
Yeah, that's only because that's proportional old style. So, so this is, so sometimes you can see that sometimes the substitution can happen as a combination of different features. And this is where you need to be careful about the feature, the order in which you specify the features.
And that's why you have SS features inter...
yeah, they're sort of, yes. There's so
not in last yes. Notes, yeah?
Yes, well, one very good example is small caps and ligatures and their interaction. If I have my my F glyph and my I glyph, and I have my liga feature definition that substitutes it by the FI ligature, and then I also have a small cap feature that substitutes the F by the small cap F and the I by the small cap I, then depending on how I stack those feature definitions in a font, if I have something like a text like that, if I put Liga in the font first and then SMCP, and then the user activates both, he will get something like which of course is not what most users would want. So I would have to have the SMCP definition before the Liga definition. So,
or you have an intelligent font where the feature is programmed in a way that it realizes Liga 2 and breaks it up.
It's probably not possible.
It is possible,
it's not very widely implemented, and also, this is basically the order. It's actually not the order of features, it's actually order of lookups, but I haven't talked about lookups because that's even more complicated.
It's a matter of font design or application design?
No, it's a matter of properly, the sequence, the order of lookups, or simply speaking, of feature definitions in a font, is essential to how OpenType works. It's basically, it's very, very important that this order, it's not arbitrary, it has to be set in a particular way, because in many cases my rule of thumb is that features that make sort of more dramatic changes to the appearance of the text, but also on the other hand, those that are, well, first of all, maybe the rule of thumb is the first, the linguistically essential features should be specified, so that those lookup come first and those lookup are processed as early as possible. So for example, things like local or CCMP, glyph composition and decomposition, which is used in situations like producing glyphs like this one, for example, which are accented Cyrillic glyphs. This designer is making for the font for, among others, for a publisher that needs them. And these sorts of glyphs, this is the naming that you would be supposed to give to them. It's uni and then the four as sort of stacked.
Why there is no underscore?
Well, there could be either, you could either call those you could either use full names of the characters, such as F, underscore F, underscore L, or maybe, AFI, something, 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 underscore grab, com, grab combining. That would be one, in this particular one, that would be one valid name for that. The other valid name for that would be uni, the view reporter, e underscore uni 0300. Or the third valid one would be uni 042E0300. It's described in the Adobe glyph naming convention. This one is simply shorter, and since there is a general, I think 32 is the limit.
Font agents are able to understand this.
Yes, all three are
in practice. Not in theory.
No, in practice, yes. In practice, all three are at work, and there is also one that is U and then only O or 2E, but that's only supported in newer applications. But that's sometimes when you have like a very long ligature, like a ligature of say, a LaTeX ligature, for instance. LATEX. Well, okay, LATEX is easy because then you would do, L underscore A underscore T underscore E underscore X. But if you imagine if that would be like the, the Cyrillic version of the LaTeX logo or something. And then all those happy things would get very long. Then you would actually do U and then stack those together. So the order is, first the linguistically essential features. And then I would say, so in this case that would be the local and CCMP, then the ones that sort of make dramatic they are functional. So in this case, for instance, superscript, subscript, and numerators, denominators, these, if the user chooses numerators and old style tabular figures, it's actually more important usually for them to get the numerator, a higher position glyph, because it has a function, while the old style preference is more of a stylistic one. So in a conflict between those two, it's quite obvious that the superscript should sort of override or triumph the old style glyph, and therefore the superscript, subscript definition will come earlier in the font.
This order of the features is not specified somehow. You can put it in the font, this series of lookups in whatever sequence you want.
Yeah, you can put them in whatever sequence you want. And there is no
hard. Then you are responsible for the
list. Yeah,
there is no hard list on that. Okay, I'm going to make a break here. And if somebody is interested here more, we can do it some.
How long do we talk? Because you could finish it in the evening.
Finish it in the evening, I guess, yeah, for instance. I can talk for 4 hours.
Schedule that, the finishing of the order.
Tomorrow is the day where interest groups can meet. There is plenty of time to do these things.
So it would be interesting if people were interested in this.
Perhaps we should hang out a list of for interest groups to subscribe, and then we find places where they can sit down and then talk about.
Well, I won't like to stop it here.
Yeah, you have finished.
Well, I mean, you know, 1 hour was very optimistic anyway. So when I teach people doing that, I spend like 4 or 5 hours doing that usually because it's open ended. So
Let me first thank you for.